Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
It's not very often on the show that we get to interview somebody that's actually one of our heroes, somebody that you follow, you learn a lot from, and it's like you had a pro athlete or somebody you followed, you know, this kind of thing. Today's guest, former member of SEAL Team 8, brought dogs into the SEALs as an actual part of the military arsenal that was a part of that. He's a podcast, the Mic Drop, Mr. Mike Ritland.
Yay! Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I started to dive into your, the intro, but we only have so much time, and I don't want to use it all up with that. You got your own Wikipedia page, you know. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Quite an accomplishment. But, not everybody has that.
But it's unbelievable what you've done in your life. We'd love to, you know, bring you in and do a full deep dive, you know, in person. But your story and career trajectory, I don't know if that's exactly how it worked out when you sat down with your guidance counselor in high school back in Iowa and said, I kind of would like to do this and that, and then I'd like to end up, you know, having a dog supplement training company, and I'd like to travel the world. I don't know how you laid that out, but it's worked out really well for you.
No, I appreciate it. It's been an incredible journey, and one that I'm very grateful for. To the question or point about the guidance counselor, for sure that was not the plan or really anything that I even thought about. I actually applied to go to the University of Iowa and got turned down. So I didn't get into Iowa.
Go figure.
Yeah. So, but I will say I was pretty singularly focused on joining the Navy and becoming a SEAL, towards the later part of high school. But, anything beyond that, it's really just kind of come as it's come. You know, it's been a remarkable journey, and one that I couldn't be more thankful for, because it's been amazing.
It's funny, little moments in time that kind of deviate things. I've heard you say it was like literally one day you were reading, I think it was a Popular Mechanics magazine, and there was an article about the details of what the SEALs do. And I think you had something like that in your mind, but it was like, that's a career option. You know, I could do that. What was it in there? Because some people would say, wow, that's amazing. You know, they watch the movie Navy SEALs with Charlie Sheen and they, oh, that's really cool. Others are like, I could do anything they're doing, you know?
Yeah. I think there's tends to be a common denominator within the SEAL teams and the adage is it's a common man with an uncommon will to succeed. And for me, I think that was pretty apt in that I was never, I would say, a great athlete. I mean, I was average or maybe a little above average in some sports, but I always had to work really, really hard to have any kind of success. And I was always just hyper competitive. And I think that combination, coupled with just some rough experiences in a big public high school, where, you know, the first couple of years I was in high school, I was really small and got beat up a number of times and jumped and what have you. So for me, that was a pretty big turning point. I mean, like looking back on it now, it's not a big deal, but, getting your heart broken the first time, at the time, it's a pretty big deal. And so, it was a very pivotal moment for me in wanting to start martial arts and ultimately do something where I was playing a role in protecting people that couldn't protect themselves. And that just always was kind of the recurring theme for me that I wanted to be a part of. And so both of my grandfathers were in World War II. I was always just kind of a history nut as far as, you know, the greatest generation, World War II, and was always really fascinated by that time period. And it just really inspired me to want to serve also. And one thing that I've typically kind of lived by decision-making process-wise is getting the most bang for my buck. You know, whatever decision I'm making, what's going to make the biggest impact? And for me, because I'd spent so much time swimming growing up competitively, and my grandpa was in the Navy, and I was kind of fascinated by the SEALs. And, you know, anytime, even if it's in print or a murmur you hear at a barbershop when when you hear this is the U.S. military's toughest training. You know, to me that there's almost like a light switch of saying, okay, well, that's what I want to do then. If you know, people are deeming that as the toughest thing that the U.S. military has to offer training wise, I want to do that. And so all of those things combined, you know, it was just kind of a no brainer for me to jump right into it.
So you said your grandfathers were in the military. How did, just from a mom's perspective, how did your mom respond when you told her that you want to be a Navy SEAL?
Well, so she was actually somewhat influential in picking the Navy. So my best friend at the time, he and I were just, we would always get into trouble, and but we would go camping and shooting and, you know, playing guns in neighborhoods and running around egging cars and just doing dumb stuff and getting into trouble. But he and I decided that we wanted to be Rangers, Army Rangers. Okay. And so when I first came home and said, you know, Mom, Matt and I are planning on joining the Army and being Rangers, she was just kind of like, no, you're not joining the Army. You know, if you want to join the military, which, you know, she was supportive of, but she was like, why don't you join the Navy? You know, your grandfather was in the Navy, three squares a day and, you know, sheets at night and what have you.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'll join the Navy then. And the irony is that, you know, I end up doing the same thing that, the same type of thing that Rangers do, or going to sleep on the ground and doing all the same stuff that she didn't want me to do. But,
yep.
You know, my parents have always been just super supportive. I am forever grateful for the childhood that I had. You know, I served with a lot of guys that had pretty tumultuous upbringings and, you know, all sorts of just really, really rough circumstances. And I never had that. I mean, I had two really loving parents, two older brothers, a younger sister. All of us got along great. My parents never fought. I mean, they're still married to this day. They're still amazing to each other. And they were always, they always pushed us to work hard and not quit and be successful, but never tried to steer what direction any of us went. And if you look at all four of us, we all four have just completely different paths. I mean, you'd almost have a hard time believing that we're related in terms of what our personalities are like and what we ended up doing for a living. But, you know, it was always, I don't care what it is that you want to do, as long as it's not illegal and productive, you know, we will support you and help you achieve whatever goal it is that you want. And they just always stood by that and still do. So, you know, it's really inspired me to try to emulate them as far as being a father. I've got two daughters, 19 and 17. And so they're kind of getting into that age where they need to figure out what their path is going to be. And so I've really tried to maintain that same level of, support, you know, but from kind of, the background, you know, and just say, you know, hey, whatever it is that you want to do, I'll help you get there. And you know, but I don't want to try to dictate to them what to do or where to go. So.
They sound remarkable. I want to meet your parents. Maybe we should interview them on the show.
Yeah, bring them on.
We can learn a lot from them. I'm sure the Flyover family would love that.
They're Kansas City. They're just up the street. So
I know. Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah. That'd be a great interview.
You know, there couldn't be a better brand, you know, than the Navy SEALs. It's like Yeti. You know, it's like, well, there's no competition. Yeah, but, you know, for me growing up, there was like the Green Berets was like the big deal. John Wayne, you know, then Green Beret, you had Rambo. Like Rambo, First Blood, you know. So when you had these conversations, it'd be like, oh, imagine like a Green Beret doing this, or, you know, that was sort of the brand. And I think YouTube and, you know, David Goggins and, you know, all this, you know, I joke sometimes about all the number of Navy SEALs that have podcasts. I'm like, are there no like cooks in the Navy? Are there like, I was a former fry cook in the Navy and I got my own podcast. It's like, or if you're a former Navy SEAL and you don't have a podcast, are you like a loser? You know, like, you know, it seems like.
And a book, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Book gotta have it.
Yeah. But it is the brand that you're associated with. It's the gold standard of military service, you know, today. It's really that bar.
Yeah, I you know, it's a strange phenomenon, really. Because I've met and worked with, you know, lots of other special operations guys, and we're all really cut from the same cloth, all very similar types of guys. Even the mission sets, I mean, post 9/11 have all been pretty consistent, you know, whether you're in the SEAL teams, Rangers, Green Berets, I mean, we're all doing a lot of the same exact stuff and even in the same way, you know, our tactics will cross train and it's pretty nuanced, you know, in terms of what the differences are. All of the training is tough. I think, you know, as far as the SEAL teams and kind of the highlight that's been put on them, I think there's a couple things. Number one, and where it really started, was Operation Red Wings and the Lone Survivor, mission that came out of that. The movie being made and that book mm-hmm. being written and it being such a smashing success that really highlighted the SEAL teams and what we do, I really think kind of catapulted a lot of that generation, which I'm a part of, from the SEAL community, kind of into the limelight with mm-hmm. movies, books, and stuff. And so as podcasts became more and more popular, that same, kind of group of guys that had had some success with books and movies and stuff started those, and it just kind of snowballed from there. So, to me, I don't think we're any better than anybody else. Like that buddy of mine, Matt, he ended up going into the Army, did multiple deployments as a Ranger, and then was in Delta Force for a deployment before he got injured really bad in a helicopter crash and lost his right leg, and then became a huge advocate for, just veteran charity stuff, and was, at Summit at Everest and I think Kilimanjaro, and was doing some training up in Alaska 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, doing some winter mountaineering training because he was going to do Denali, and an avalanche happened and he ended up being killed by it. So him and several other team members that he had spent years training mountaineering with. So, but anyway, my point in all of that is just that, the caliber of guys is phenomenal across the board, and they're all just as worthy and deserving of having podcasts and books and all the things that, that you see a lot of SEAL team guys doing.
I think someone's given a lot of wind in the sails of those messages is because the messages translate so well into other fields. You mentioned, Kilimanjaro. We're planning on doing Kilimanjaro next year. And it's mostly just, a matter of, if you can prepare a little bit, but if you can just be uncomfortable for a long enough period of time mm-hmm. and choose to do, keep going, it's one, that you can do. Our path has been more business, never served in the military. My dad was a Marine, and some of it was just timing and age and what was going on in the world at the moment. But, I see a parallel, in our whole life. We started our first company at 23 and have worked with thousands of people. And there's certain people, like the trait we would try to ingrain in there is the ability to like separate your feelings from your actions. Mm-hmm. If you can kind of say, this is what I feel like doing, this is what needs to be done, I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. Even starting our podcast, both of our kids, last year we were home 5 weekends. Well, 2 or 3 times, both of our kids worked 24 hours editing, working when we did a live event to come back because you're starting to get on Monday. So this ability to, whether it's in the military or in the business world or whatever, the SEALs just highlight it. But those messages you guys have from the training specifically, more so than even the missions, the completing the training, this ability to like feel bad and keep going. And I think that's so, we're so malnourished in that nutrient mm-hmm. as a society of getting off the couch, and we have a very comfortable world. Everybody's got a thermostat and you don't have to cut wood all summer in order to be warm in the winter. And it's kind of it's the most comfortable. Poor people have the most comfortable life, even compared to kings of the past, they got a phone and this kind of stuff. So your messages translate so well. People hear that. They're like, oh man, they did that. I can, I guess, get up an extra 30 minutes early and prepare for my day, or whatever.
No, I agree. And, I think that's really the human condition that's required for people to be happy, honestly. I see that a lot in, watching kids grow up where, for the first time in really in human history, there's really zero struggle. And so I think human nature is we're hardwired to have some resistance, some struggle, some thing to overcome, and very few people have that. And so I think that's why you see so many manufactured crises, that are coming out of Western society is that there's nothing to really be threatened or worry about. So you manufacture things because you have to have a cause, you have to have purpose, or, you get depressed and a lot of people end up killing themselves because of it. I mean, you even see it with hyper successful people who are miserable is because they've done so well that now that they've kind of done everything that they wanted to do. Yeah. And that's why you see people like, Chris Cornell and, a lot of celebrities that are kind of at the pinnacle of their careers, getting into, you know, drugs and either end up ODing or killing themselves or what have you, is that there's that lack of challenge. And so mm-hmm. one of the things that's very, very rewarding and I think unique to the SEAL teams comparative to the rest of society is that it's a very unapologetically Machiavellian mm-hmm. Means of training and living, in that it's, here's the goal. I don't care how you do it. I don't care, you know, what path you take and what you need to do or even compromise to get it done, just get it done. And the consequence for not getting it done is so severe that it forces you to be incredibly unique in your approach or, you know, very, very industrious in terms of how you accomplish that. And so when you do that over and over and over, just like training to do anything, you get good at being resourceful. You get good at figuring things out and circumventing problems and it just, you know, ends up becoming a hard wiring where everything that you approach is that way. And I think that's why you see so many special operations guys, not just specific to the SEAL teams, but higher level military guys that are really, really successful entrepreneurs, is because that's really the name of the game with that, is that there is no playbook. You know, an MBA from Harvard isn't going to teach right. you how to figure out or deal with the stress of having to put your power bill on a credit card with 0% interest when you're first starting yeah. out to keep your lights on and you know, having to figure out ways around problems that you run into day in, day out as an entrepreneur are things that I really think a lot of special operations guys thrive in that. So I love, you know, the mentality and the training and the you know, the kind of the consequence of going through all of that and it becoming party. I think it's served me really, really well. And I'm appreciative of having been through it.
It's interesting. Even the question you were talking about when you were setting it up, because you had read a study, I believe, about the brain, how when you do something that you don't want yeah. to do, that it actually develops the brain. It can be atrophied or it can actually...
There's a place in the brain, I forget the technical name of it. There's a place in the brain that they've studied brains, and like obese people, this part of the brain is very underdeveloped. And then based on career paths, every time you do something that you don't want to do, like they didn't use this example, but like say getting in a cold plunge or something, it's like, oh, I don't want to do that, mm-hmm. but you make yourself do it. Every time you do that, it's cold, hit snooze. Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to get up. You know, every time
saying probably no to a certain food yeah. and yes to something
every
else.
Time you go against the grain of your flesh, you know, like you take your spirit and say, no, I'm in charge. I'm driving this car. Body, you're going to do, you know, mm-hmm. like Iron Man training or anything where like my body says no, I say mm-hmm. yes. Every time you lean into that, that piece of the brain actually strengthens and enlarges. And so
yeah, that was actually really encouraging for me when I heard that, because there's been times in my life where I feel like I'm really strong, and other times in my life, like my discipline is really like lacking. And so when you actually told me that, I thought those are things I can actually change just by my will, by saying, no, I'm not going to do that. Or yes, I am going to do this. That's something I can actually control. It's not like, oh, I was just born that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think there's another part or component to that where, you know, that the accountability to yourself, I think is a habit also, you know, where if you make a deal with yourself and you continually break it, you know, it's to me, at least, it's difficult to ask or expect other people to trust you if you can't trust you, you know? And so I think just from kind of a principled standpoint, you know, even aside from the scientific aspect and benefits of it, the habit or habitual, method of being able to trust yourself, I think, is really, really important. And I think a lot of people, you know, they don't realize that. I will say, I mean, like the cold plunge thing, as an example, I've been doing it for a few years now, every single morning. And it's part of my morning routine. I have a very specific morning routine that's about an hour and a half, and a very specific evening routine that's about an hour. And I found for me, and I think it's pretty consistent with most people that have routines and protocols or processes throughout the day, just like in business, the more processes you can have in place, the less decisions you have to make.
Yeah.
You know, that decision fatigue that I think plagues a lot of people even as something as simple as whether or not to cold plunge or whatever it is that you're doing, you know, exercise wise, is really, really crucial. Is if you just say, okay, the first hour, I'm going to have these 10 boxes that I check, and those are non-negotiable. I don't have to think about it. I just have to do it. Mm-hmm. And that just, I think, simplifies it and makes it a lot easier to accomplish, frankly. But, you know, I find that for me, if, you know, the fewer decisions that I have to make in the day, as far as little things like that, the micro decisions, the better. And then the more kind of mental acuity and bandwidth I have for the big decisions or the business problems that are unexpected that I have to tackle.
Yeah, one strong predetermined decision versus 10 new ones every single morning.
I love that. I actually go to a gym where you sign up ahead of time that you're going to attend. And if you don't go, they charge you $12 for not attending because you already signed up for it. And, you know, and so it actually is like, it's such a great motivation because I'm not going to lose those $12.
You're blackmailing yourself in advance.
I did. Yeah. And so they've actually kind of helped me create disciplines in my life because I'm like, I'm not going to be charged $12. Okay, I'm going to the gym.
And she's
not
cheap.
A question.
She's cheap. So it kind of works, you know, in her nature really well. Because it's going to be like $12 for the sleep would feel better than $12. Just Stacey, there's no sleep that feels as good as $12.
No, I'm not losing those $12. You know, so I think sometimes even when you know, people can help you to create those parameters, you know, around yourself, that's, you know, that's beneficial to even create those disciplines for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, all resistance today has to be artificially created. I mean, try and go back even 100 years, or go back to the 1500s and explain a treadmill, or you know, in anything where, you know, we have to go to a gym to walk, you know, why? Cause you can have a pretty good freaking life today and not move, you know, at any other point in time and in a lot of places in the world today, like if you're fat, it's like, wow, how'd you do that? Man, I want to hang out with you. What are you doing? That's amazing. Because the idea of you have more calories accessible to you than you're burning. That was, most people spent the majority of their day trying to acquire calories to live. You know, and now we have to go to a gym. We have to lift something. I mean, go explain to some farmer, you know, that was carrying buckets and throwing hay. Like, hey, I'm going to have to go to a gym to simulate what you do naturally. But that's kind of the world we have now.
I know. It's one of those double-edged swords. Is in some ways, it's obviously a good problem to have in terms of, you know, having enough to where we have excess in pretty much every category. You know, but there is a happy medium that needs to be upheld, and too much of anything is a problem, you know? So that's where, you just have to be disciplined and hold yourself accountable and make sure that you're staying between the lines and doing the things that are important.
Let's talk about a little bit mental health nowadays and kind of what's going on in our world around us, what we're seeing in schools, but also how that pertains to the military. You know, we're seeing what's going on with transgender movement, seeing what's going on with like drag queens. And that's something that we've even see kind of creep into the military. What is your thought on that? And how is that, you think, affecting our country?
Let me position it also. The ads when I grew up, again, I never went into the military, but I had Marine Corps posters in my basement and had like a little workout gym I built up in high school, you know. I put the Marine Corps recruitment pictures in there because they were the most inspiring thing in the world around. There was no, this was before successory posters and all that. It was the Marine Corps posters. Like, you'd see those Marines, you know, and it's like, you know, the swords and the dress things and the workout they did. It's like, man, it was inspiring. And, you know, now the Navy's using a drag queen as a marketing recruiter.
I want to actually show you, I'm sure you've seen this, Mike, but maybe the Flyover family has that. I want to show you guys just a quick little video about, you know, someone in the Navy that is, they are really highlighting as a drag queen. Let's check this out.
I am Joshua Kelly. I am a Navy petty officer and I'm a drag queen. And I'm Harpy Daniels. I had a standing ovation. It was truly inspirational and truly gratifying to me to be able to touch so many people's lives who've never seen a drag queen before. Everyone was amazed of the amount of bravery, the amount of boldness, and the amount of beauty that it took to go out on stage. I set the bar as a sailor, And then I set the bar as person to be that inspirational person, to be that person they want to look up to, not just inside our work and our uniform, but even outside in the real world, showing that just being who you are today, people can accept that.
So I guess just the difference between the recruiting videos that we saw growing up, you see what other nations' recruiting videos, you know, look like today, and we've played those in the past, but you know, what people do in their own private time, I'm a big one. Everybody kind of stay in your own lane. But at the same time, the recruiting numbers are down across the board in all branches. Is that going to increase it, or are they actually like accelerating a decline?
Well, first, I would just say to me that that's both embarrassing and pathetic. And I would just say it's disappointing to see that, especially the Navy, having spent, you know, over a decade in it, would partake in a recruiting campaign such as that, as well as support and allow activities like that on a ship. I just think it's lame. And, you know, to me, one of the unique, and I would say it borders on almost a blessing in terms of how the military can function on really a singular question, you know, which is, does this make us a better warfighting force? The answer is yes, you do it. The answer is no, you don't do it. You know, it really is that simple. You know, we're not a business. The bottom line doesn't matter. Yes, we have a budget that we have to adhere to. But our primary and really singular focus is to, you know, be able to get our hands dirty on behalf of Uncle Sam, and to be as capable as possible in doing so. So things like that are a distraction. I think it sends the wrong message for two reasons. One is that culturally, that to me, that like that just shouldn't be part of the Navy. No other highlights on culture are part of the military. I mean, it's one of the things where when you go to boot camp, like it doesn't matter where you're from, what accent you have, what skin color you are, what religion you are, all of those things go out the window and you become a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine first and foremost, and really only. All of the other cultural things are, to your point, on your own time. And to me, that's in that same category. You know, from a recruiting standpoint, to me, most people, I think, that have any inkling in joining the military would all look at that and say, I don't want to be a part of that. Also, that's not the type of person that I think is going to benefit the military or somebody that you would want to try to attract. I do think it's a mental illness. I don't think people should be discriminated against or treated poorly because of it. I think quite the opposite. They should be treated with both respect and highlight on the word treated, because I do think it's a mental problem. And so, you know, it falls in line with, you know, any other major mental disorder where in terms of, you know, if somebody was a schizophrenic, our military and our society would not coddle and condone every single one of their personalities as authentic with its own security, social security number and driver's license. You know, somebody wouldn't have 35 different driver's license based on what personality they're in. And so to me, that's no different. I don't know why it's highlighted so much. It's pretty baffling. And I just don't get it. You know, I don't have a problem with it in terms of that, you know, any person partaking in that, but it shouldn't be part of the military the same way, you know, in anything that's a cultural highlight of something that's an anomaly percentage wise shouldn't be shoved into mainstream military culture, because it's just not appropriate.
I appreciate you answering that from there. Like
watching, I feel sad.
Me too. As a military, what does that do for us? Does that make us, you know, vulnerable as a country? I mean, what does that look like for the future?
It seems like it's definitely going to hurt the recruitment numbers.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they're trying to help the numbers, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad across the board. I mean, it does not do anything for troop morale in terms of the people that are actually going and fighting, you know, the people that are actually in combat, you know, who are, you know, partaking in operations where they're going outside of a wire or a base or, you know, in a place that's, you know, the entire population is actively trying to take your life. You know, the type of people who are willing to do that and who are capable at that job don't mix well with that type of mentality and you know, behavioral condition. And I think, you know, by highlighting that and using it as a recruiting tool and being proud that the Navy is so supportive of something that's clearly a mental illness is baffling to me. Where I think the problem is that it started, you know, during the Obama administration of, I will say, infiltrating the military and weaving different strategic high level leadership positions with people who had no business being in those positions. And they, over time, diluted and watered down the caliber of our military. You know, Trump being in office for 4 years, it started to go the other direction in a great way and made big leaps and bounds. And then, you know, the last almost 4 years now that Biden's been there, it's been an absolute train wreck. I mean, like, I don't know that you could have damaged the military more if you actually intended to. And I have to wonder. Mm-hmm. You know, are you trying to cripple our military? Because I don't understand any other explanation for doing what this administration currently has done to our military and our country, frankly, than to just think this has to be intentional. Like, you can't be that stupid to just let those things happen. It's got to be on purpose. I don't know how else you frame it.
Let's talk about Trump being in, because there was a big moment. I don't know if you've ever seen the comedian, I think his name is Shane Gillis. He does this this impersonation of Trump that's pretty hilarious. I wanted to do the clip in here, but like every other word is the F-bomb, but it's still really funny.
There's been too much bleeping. You wouldn't have heard anything.
But he's really funny, his impersonation of Trump. But he does this whole bit about when he took down the leader of ISIS. You know, he talks about, you know, robot going through the wall and the dogs coming in. And I remember when that happened, because all of a sudden dogs in the military got this highlight. They saw these pictures, these dogs with the goggles and the cameras and all this stuff on. It's like, holy crap. These guys are like, these are another level of dog. You know, I showed them to our dogs and they're like, wow, you know,
that's possible.
I should have done more with my life. You know, look at these dogs. I think his name is like Conan, you know, was the dog. Now I have a Doberman. And so I even have a book about the number of lives Doberman saved in World War II. And I think they were used more now, that they've kind of been phased out in some of these things. They're not quite as willing participants to run into a burning building by nature as other breeds. But you know, great assets, you know, to the military. But this takedown of was al-Baghdadi, you know, the use of dogs, and that brought that into the front, you know, and he got the Medal of Honor, all this stuff. Talk about dogs in the military and how that triggered for you and your role in that in the SEALs.
Yeah, so I think it actually, if you take one more step back, where the initial, I would say, kind of explosion of, you know, interest publicly in canines, specifically to their use in special operations, was the Bin Laden raid. Is that when people found out that there was a dog and dog handler, a good friend of mine, Will Chesney, was the handler and Cairo was the dog. People's minds were blown by that. They had no idea that our special operations were not just using dogs, but using them in the capacity that we were doing, where they're jumping out of planes with them and fast roping and swimming and all kinds of things. So, and that's really kind of where my being catapulted into the limelight started as well. At the time, I was out on the West Coast as a SEAL canine trainer. And when that happened, you know, I got, and in fact, that's how I met Laura Logan. You know, was the 60 Minutes piece that she and her team came and did. And I was approached by St. Martin's Press, which is under Macmillan, to do a book on it. So it wasn't, I decided to write a book. It was, you know, I was at a position where, you know, I'd spent 12 years in the SEAL teams, had been a West Coast SEAL canine trainer, you know, for a period of time. And then the Bin Laden raid happened. So I was just kind of poised at a very, convenient time in my career, age and experience wise, to be, you know, somebody that they were interested in highlighting and having write a book. So that's kind of where it really started. And then it just really built or continued to build from there. And then when the Baghdadi raid happened, you know, the Bin Laden raid, the dog played a role, but it wasn't, you know, kind of the catalyst to where he was captured. Whereas the Baghdadi raid, the dog really forced his hand in terms of him clacking himself off. And you know, the dog was kind of solely responsible for that, or played a huge role in it. So I think that that just further highlighted it. And so, you know, I would say the use of dogs in the military and in combat in general, one of the most unique things about it is that if you go back to, you know, the earliest recorded history that we have as human beings, as it relates to human beings combating each other, you know, back to the Roman Empire and even prior to that, dogs were used in combat. And yeah. If you fast forward now to if you look at all of the weapons and all of the things that we use in combat today, none of them were used back then. It's all very technologically advanced. You know, there's laser guided munitions, night vision, smart bombs, predator drones, you know, IEDs, all kinds of gnarly stuff. The one thing that we still use thousands of years later are dogs. It's the only thing, you know, and so one thing I can tell you in special operations, we don't use anything that's not really, really good at what it does. Nothing. Mm. You know, I mean, if there is a unit or a group of people that can battle test a product and tell you what's wrong with it, how easy it will break, or what the failure points are, special operations is the best proving ground to figure that out. And so the fact that our tier one highest level, you know, anti-terrorism special operations units have dogs that are out in front of them, to me, tells you everything you need to know about just how special they are and how capable they are.
I'm glad you put that clip up there. I was thinking the same thing from Gladiator, you know, upon my signal, unleash hell, you know, those dogs are kind of coming at them, you know, and it is. And I think, I know I grew up on a farm and it gives an era without, you know, we didn't have cable, no YouTube, obviously, no, actually barely in electronics. And so we trained animals, you know, we had horses, dog cats. I trained a pig. We lived in Mexico for 2 years when our kids were in high school and, you know, same thing. And so
I
trained a chicken, man. He would come when he was called, he'd hop in my lap. He did all kinds of commands.
Followed you everywhere.
You know, and you can train about anything. I, you know, love our dogs and, you know, they're kind of capable of stuff. But when you see what you do with dogs, from every aspect of enhancing their nutrition, from training, you know, every aspect. Let's jump into that component. And oh, look at that good looking Doberman there on the left.
Beautiful.
Just sexy. Look at that dude. it's funny. Everywhere I go with my dog, he goes with me everywhere. I mean, I have a big Ford truck and he's with me everywhere. I go in and out of places. I get stopped constantly. People stop and they're like, wow, he's so good looking. Like, I've never gotten that personally once. But my dog gets it all the time. You know, we'll even take a family photo and I'll be looking at it and I'm like, I think my dog's the best looking one in the family, you know, but just crazy smart, but they're capable of so much, but they have this capacity, to love and connect, but still be fierce and protect. It's like the traits. I have a daughter, you know, is in the dating process and this kind of stuff. I'm like, you need to find a man like this, you know, that like love, fierce, protect. Love, you know, likes to cuddle, you know, kind of lets his ears rub, kind of be there. It's like my dog's the kind of person I would like to be.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I do see a lot of parallels in terms of what you look for in a good working dog versus what you look for in a special operations candidate. I mean, they're pretty evenly paralleled that way. And, you know, the reality of it is I think a lot of people, especially with working dogs and maybe even special operations folks, think that they're just kind of in case of war, break glass, forwardly aggressive all the time, want to hurt and kill everything. And it's just not the case, you know, both human and dog, is that there's a level of confidence there that has to be at a certain order of magnitude where you're not worried about most things. You're so confident in yourself that there's very few things that will ruffle your feathers or rattle you, and you know the difference between being annoyed versus being threatened. Mm-hmm. You know, and a good, strong, you know, environmentally stable, mentally strong, and you know, from a temperament standpoint, very appropriate. You know, those dogs are absolutely that, where they know what's worth being threatened by versus not. And they're very, very capable of being incredibly violent and forwardly aggressive, but they also have a I wouldn't say a nurturing side, but a gentle and affectionate side and a loving side and a calm demeanor where the situation, you know, warrants it. again, no different than human beings. You know, most of us are fathers that, you know, in special operations, or a lot of guys are, and, you know, you have to be able to, you know, go do horrible things to horrible people when the situation dictates. But I can also be very ginger and careful with a newborn baby and make sure that they're okay and safe and protected. And you need to have that balance.
That's huge. Okay. So when you go to MikeRitland.com, if you're just listening, it's RITLAND.com. So MikeRitland.com. Let's talk about the training. So how does that work? So, someone has a dog and they want you to train it. Is that how that works? Do they buy dogs from you? What is that process?
So there's we do a few board and trains where people will send us their dogs and we train them. I would say that that's typically not my recommendation. It's, you know, it's better to train the dog yourself for two reasons. One is that just like if you have problem children and you send them to a boarding school, when they come back, if you don't know what went into straightening them out and you don't know how to maintain it, that's not going to last very long.
True.
It's the same thing with a board and train. You know, you have to understand how the donuts are made or how the sausage is made, you know, to be able to maintain it. But there's another point or another side of that coin where the relationship that you have with a dog is going to be significantly improved if you are the one doing the training also.
Sure.
You know, because if you think about the way dogs think, it's hard to even imagine how a dog's mind works compared to ours. You know, we think in a language, we communicate in a language. If you think about the amount of information that's been passed just in the 30 or 40 minutes that we've been sitting here talking, it's significant, but it's all through verbal language. Body language and nonverbal communication has played basically zero role in how we've been communicating thus far. If you think about a dog, though, right, is that your dog, every dog that's ever lived, has never thought in a language. You know, they don't dream in a language. They don't reason in a language. You know, so it's hard to even imagine what your life would be like where everything is A plus B equals C. You know, that their mind works more like a calculator than it does our mind. So understanding that and knowing that, okay, you know, the dog doesn't care how much you're worth, what you do for a living, how many Instagram right. followers you have, you know, their currency is time and engagement, you know? And so the more time you spend with them, if it's structured, if it's intentional and you're feeding through training and you're removing white noise and you have, you know, a dog classroom where you're shaping behavior and teaching them what you want them to know, their trust and bond towards you is going to skyrocket. So I encourage everybody to go to teamdog.pet and sign up for the online training. It's $99 a year, or you can do $500 for a lifetime. You know, and that teaches you all of the basic skill sets on how to teach your dog anything. And to the point of all of the phenomenal things that, you know, that working dogs at a really high level do versus, you know, grandma's Labradoodle that you don't want knocking kids over. How you get from point A to point B is essentially the exact same. You know, the training is almost irrelevant. You know, the higher the caliber, the higher the genetic traits need to be in the existing dog, that they have to be hardwired to be able to accomplish that. But how you get from point A to point B is really the exact same in terms of reinforcing certain behaviors, extinguishing others, building a bond and relationship first, and then, you know, using food and mostly positive reinforcement to shape behaviors and teach your dog, you know, what it is
that's what you did with me.
I kind of perform the same way too myself. You know, give me a little dog and a little treat and well done. I'm good.
Old Pat, little compliment. I joke with our boomer, and he's like part. I tell people he's kind of like part Navy SEAL and part Kardashian. You know, a little bit, because he's like this badass that'll go check everything, but he also, you know, he needs a lot of affirmations and told he's pretty, you know, quite a bit. So
does he have implants too? Or?
That's really good.
He has enhanced ears.
So from MikeRitland.com, looks like you can get to the training or you can go directly to teamdog.pet. And so we'll put that in the notes below. So that's the training aspect of it. Let's talk about the Warrior Dog Foundation. What is that?
Oh, can I say one more thing on the Ritland.com? Sure. Flyover family, we have like no financial connection. Mike, Dave, I'm going to do this, no endorsement, but.
Well, I want to go to that in just a second.
I want to hit what we're talking about.
Supplements. Well, all of it goes together.
All right, let's hit this then next, because.
Supplements, foods, and treats.
these treats, this one here is Team Dog Skin Coat and Soft Chews. Now, Doberman, they got short, thin black hair. In the winter, he's always gotten really dry skin. I've tried to give him like omega-3s and stuff like that. This one here, these smell so good. I want to eat one. They're really good. But this product here, if you ever have a dog with like dry skin and, you know, that kind of stuff, or they're kind of itchy from it, he'd be in the winter and it would show almost like dandruff. I always tell people,
and
like,
we give him omegas.
Yeah. Like don't scratch him with your nails. Like just pet him. This in it, like in a day, transformed his coat, like instantly. This supplement here, this is why I just put we feed him morning and night. So I put two or three in his stuff in the morning and two or three there.
Well, hold it up so they can see too. So they're,
this is delicious.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could eat one or not, but they actually smell pretty good for.
Couldn't help any dry skin you have.
I'm like, those are savory chunks of beef. Look at that. But anyway, it's a phenomenal product. And I don't, this is the only thing I've bought
off
your site so far, but it is unbelievable. And literally in a day changed his coat and got his skin under control because he has real dry skin.
Oh, that's great. Great to hear. I appreciate the feedback. The food is something where, you know, kind of to one of your first questions of would you ever have thought that you'd be here? The short answer is absolutely not. And the food and treats and supplements was really born out of, just getting tired of companies that when they first came out were little mom and pop, really high quality food. 3-4 years later, their customer base is booming and a big, you know, Mars or Purina or whoever comes in and buys their customer base, makes their food in their shop now and it goes to hell and you can see it. And one of the unique things about dogs, unlike people, marketing doesn't work on dogs. It works on people.
Right.
But you know, you know 100% if it works or not. You know, there's no placebo effect with good marketing or great packaging or your friends telling you about it. I mean, 100%, like if it's a good product, you're going to know. If it's not a good product, you're going to know. So, it's a lot of good real-time feedback. And so, you know, I spent a couple of years kind of developing the different products and tweaking them and getting them exactly to where I want. And the Warrior Dog Foundation has been a good benefit of that because I've been able to give them, you know, all these products and make sure that they all do well on them. But, you know, that was really the premise behind why I started. It was I got tired of they're not being the products that I wanted made how I wanted. And so that's really why I started the company and then just decided to share it with everybody. And now it's kind of turned into its own monster. But
we'll put a link to the Warrior Dog Foundation down below as well. Give like a 1-minute synopsis. What is that about and how can people participate in that? Because I think most people, you know, kind of honestly like dogs better than they do people. Like I don't cry often, pretty much never, but like, you know, like you show like Marley and Me, one of those things.
Oh, man,
I'm a mess. You know, something with a dog, you know, a lot of softer spot.
You should go see the movie Arthur the King. It's out right now. It's an adventure race where a dog finds them and follows them. And it's really good. It's got Mark Wahlberg in it. And it's a great movie. You'll probably need some Kleenex with that one too.
Oh. Okay. All right.
But the Warrior Dog Foundation has been, something that I've been really, really just blessed to be a part of. I couldn't be prouder of it as an organization. So back in August of 2010, I was approached by a unit that had a couple of dogs that needed to be retired. They'd both been injured in combat, rehabilitated, and then deployed again. But they were at the end of their career and couldn't continue to operate at that level and capacity. And so they asked if I would take them. They asked a bunch of guys in my position if we would take them. And we all said no. And so fast forward a couple of weeks, couple of months, they asked me again, which, you know, made me realize, okay, well, everybody else said no, if you're asking me again. So I just said, you know, what's going to happen with these dogs if none of us take them? And they said, well, we'll probably put them to sleep. And I said, send them. There's zero chance I'm letting that happen. So I'll be happy to take them if that keeps them from being put down. So that's where it started. That opened the floodgates. And now we've taken in, well over 300 dogs from everybody, just about every military unit, special operations, police departments all over the country, customs, border patrol, secret service, you name it. We've retired dogs from all of those organizations. And Where we step in is a very kind of singular mission, which is where the problem child dogs, the dogs that are at that really high level who have, they've all bitten people that they weren't supposed to. They've all kind of had their three strikes, and the unit that they're with has determined that this dog is a bigger liability than an asset. And we just can't continue to keep this dog because they're just too big of a problem. And so instead of them being euthanized, we step in and we take them. So, you know, the great part about that is, you know, you can walk around the kennel building of 30 different kennel runs and look into every single one of their eyes and know that they're alive right now because of us, and they wouldn't be if we didn't exist. The downside with that is that those types of dogs, which is a fraction of a percentage, if you look at the 50,000 or so working dogs in the United States, most of them aren't, you know, of this caliber in terms of being hard to deal with. But the downside of that is that, you know, my kennel facility has to be built like a super max prison in terms of how overbuilt everything is, because similar to SEAL teams, they will break or ruin anything if it can be broken, or ruined or chewed up or destroyed in any capacity. The staff that you have to kind of find, recruit, hire, and bring in is not, you know, the $9 an hour high school kids that are, mm-hmm. you know, working at doggy right. daycares, you know, with Fluffy, the neighbor's golden retriever, you know. So it takes a high level individual that's very motivated, that, you know, can be out in the elements and can deal with some really high drive, aggressive working dogs that are temperamental and cranky. And you know, so all of that, you know, having 24/7 eyes on them and care, you know, is a heavy lift and not an easy thing to accomplish year round and year after year. So the best way to support that is to go to warriordogfoundation.org and donate. You know, as much as we'd love to have people send, you know, toys or things, you know, we have a very specific protocol and things that they have and most things that they can't have. And even from a volunteer standpoint, a lot of people say, well, I'd love to come help out. And unfortunately, the liability is significant, but there's also the component where the dogs don't understand that you're a volunteer. You're just a total stranger that they don't know or trust. And yeah. so, you know, if we had people coming and going nonstop that were new for a few days to a couple weeks or what have you, it's just confusing to the dogs and they don't respond well to a bunch of strangers coming in and right. out of their house, so to speak. So
they probably don't do good really with real fluffy little toys with a squeaker in the middle.
No.
Like those don't
last. I mean, we've got a number of dogs that can't even have a dog bed, and the dog beds that we use aren't, you know, the soft, you know, plush dog beds that most people have.
The Mike Lindell, my pillow dog bed.
Probably would not be the one.
Nope. No, it's, I mean, it's an aluminum frame with marine grade yep. vinyl as the laying surface. And we've got a number of dogs that will actually chew those up and have destroyed aluminum framed. And it's not like, you know, tiny little aluminum. It's like 4-inch round aluminum, very, very sturdy stuff. And they chew it right up. I mean, they'll rip metal water buckets, aluminum water buckets off of their doors and chew them up. And I mean, it's just, so it's very Spartan conditions, which I think sometimes surprises people, and they want to donate, you know, stuffed animals and soft dog beds. But the reality of those are going to end up out in the yard a few days later if you donate stuff like that.
Right. I remember my Doberman was one, it was a hard baseball, and he'd been playing with it and it was fine. Then all of a sudden he just like lit. I'm looking at something, looking out, and he just tore the cover off of it in like 3 seconds. You know, yeah. I'm like, wow, that's pretty. Yeah. They're unbelievably powerful. So warriordogfoundation.org.
And we'll put that in the notes below, as well as you can get there from mikeritland.com. And then finally, Mike, before we let you go, tell us about the podcast that you have.
Mike Drop. Yep. And we won't get into how you thought of the name and where, but tell us about the podcast.
I imagine you've heard that story.
Then, oh, yeah.
Why you're saying that. But, yeah, so I've been doing it for 6 years, and kind of similarly, I mean, I'd love to tell you all these things were my ideas. None of them were. I'm an unoriginal bastard that way, apparently. I mean, because everything that I do is just, there's been enough people who have asked me to do it to where I said, well, if there's this much demand, I'll give it a shot. And so, I mean, the online training, the podcast, the dog food, the Warrior Dog Foundation, all of them are in response to a demand. But so with the podcast, you know, when the book and 60 Minutes thing came out, I went on a lot of shows and did a lot of interviews and just got a lot of messages of people saying, hey, that was my favorite episode. I think you should have your own show. So I took a crack at it. That was a little over 6 years ago now. And, you know, for me, the big thing is when I saw Donald Trump get elected and kind of the why back in 2016, it to me spoke volumes of how starved our society is for an unfiltered, raw, no BS, no punches pulled, authentic, long form conversations with people where there's nothing held back. There's no politics. There's no HR scrubbing for, you know, whatever PR reasons or what have you. It's very raw and unfiltered. And it's something that I just really enjoy doing and providing a platform for a lot of American heroes to come on the show and tell their story. I also have a Patreon, you know, for ad free and a lot of behind the scenes stuff with, you know, whatever the guest is, they're kind of the reason why we're there. We'll do some off camera or off, you know, public camera stuff. And so I encourage
playing some guitar in the storage room.
Yeah. I mean, you name it, all kinds of stuff. So yeah. Going for drives, you know, cars, motorcycles, getting in the bite suit, you name it. So, we try to bring some extra unfiltered content to the Patreon page. So, the Patreon link is in the link tree of all my social media profiles.
And if all this falls through, you could go on road with Metallica.
Man, you can play the guitar.
I heard you play playing Enter Sandman on there. It's pretty good.
That was really good.
Not bad. The last thing, I want to get this in sooner. We're almost out of time, but I've got to play. I started following you with the 60 Minutes piece, probably like a lot of people. It's where you came onto my radar and with Laura, and she's the one that connected us. But when you got to go on Fox News with Jesse Waters, like you went from like – you're a legend for like five reasons, but you just went into the stratosphere on your stock. I want to play this clip because you did literally a mic drop in your podcast called Mic Drop, but you dropped the mic at the end of this. This was this right around the time of when Baghdadi came down and they were focused on dogs. Yeah. Is that why you were on there? Let's play this just the end of this clip real quick. You were on there at the interview, but I got to play the end. This is legendary.
Who's to your left there, and I'm sure he's ready to go out on the next mission, and he can't wait. So thank you, and thank Nero for your service. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. If I could I throw a PSA out real quick?
Real quick.
Just the remarkable nature of these dogs and them being highlighted in the news creates a huge demand by people that frankly shouldn't have them. If you see the coverage and you decide I want one of these dogs, either buy a finished, trained, fully trained and finished dog from a professional, or just don't get one at all. And Epstein didn't kill himself.
All right. Okay. Thank you for that commentary. All right, Mike, maybe more on that later.
I love
that. That was great.
Mic drop. Legendary. Your phone had to blown up from every Navy SEAL, like what happened to you like 5 seconds after that?
I mean, so quite literally. Well, first thing I would say, hats off to Fox for actually airing it because it was not live. We recorded it a couple days prior to that and they very
Taken it out.
I was honestly surprised that it even made it. So I watched it and when I saw it, I was like, huh, they threw it in there. Before I even finished thinking that to myself, my phone started ringing. I mean, I for about 2 weeks, it was just nonstop.
I'm sure.
Like people I hadn't heard from in 10 years. They're like, hey, I'm at a truck stop in Wyoming eating wings. And there's this table of dudes talking about this guy that was on Fox and it's you. And they're showing each other the video and they're all laughing. And he's like, I haven't talked to you in 20 years. And this, you know, just... It was crazy, it was that kind of 15 minutes of fame, if you will. Probably not surprisingly, I've not been invited back. So before that, Fox would call me quite often asking me to chime in on certain things. And sometimes I would do it, sometimes I wouldn't. They've not called a single time since then. And that was 5 years ago. So even though they may have thought it was funny, I think I proved myself to be enough of a wild card for them not to roll the dice on me anymore. But it wasn't, and it actually wasn't something that I had pre-planned either, which I think surprises some people. It just it was kind of at that time where, you know, it was right after that the Epstein thing had happened, and Everybody's like, wait a minute, you know, and I had heard people talking about it on the radio on the way into the studio, and during the interview, I kind of felt like Jesse was making light of the situation, just kind of asking dumb, dog questions and missing an opportunity to make it a little more serious. It just seemed like he was just kind of almost making fun of the whole thing.
And it's kind of his shtick, especially more then with that show than what he has now. But that's kind of
it frankly just kind of irritated me. And so I really just did it to kind of mess with him back. And that was it. You know, it was totally off the cuff, just in kind of response to him seeming like he was taking it not that serious. And so I was just kind of throwing it back at him a little bit. And and then it ends up being
love it.
This
legendary.
I loved it. That was great, Mike.
I love people we bring on. We like to have smart people that have done stuff. And, you know, a lot of them are doctors and different things. And I'm glad the content that they bring. But it is a great treat to have on somebody that I have in the hero status, and that's you. And for every reason, your duty there, military service, what you do with dogs, just every single box, double check. Love to bring you in again live in person. You give incredible parenting advice, how to handle daughters when they're dating. You know, there's so much that you get into that I'm just like, yes, yes, and yes. So thanks a lot. We'd love to continue this.
I'd love to come on in person and meet you guys and sit down. So, let's do it.
That would be great. Flyover family, go to MikeRitland.com. Thanks again, Mike, for joining us. We really appreciate it.
For those of you that are my age or maybe even, a little older in that range, you probably remember this commercial. Where's the beef?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I guarantee if there's a cut in the supply chain due to weather, any other kind of political attack, we're in election year, your kids are going to be looking at you saying that exact same thing if all you've stored is rice, beans, and maybe some pudding. They're like, where's the beef? They want to substitute real beef for stuff made in a lab.
It's alive.
Even if you're, kind of a prepared person, you've got a few things stored, it's hard to take care of the protein source in a way that's still enjoyable. These prices are so good and the beef isn't in such good quality, you could be storing this beef and use it on a regular basis. This could be part of your Taco Tuesday experience because you don't have to worry about storing it in a freeze location.
The girl has tacos.
So go to flyovermeat.com, use promo code FLYOVER for a huge discount. Again, flyovermeat.com, promo code FLYOVER. This is a crazy time to be alive.
Well, just in our lifetime, used to be where you'd hear your grandparents talk about how cheap gas was and stuff, and it was 75 years before, 50 years before.
And so we've seen a lot of changes since Biden took office. $700 more a month
than what you needed in January of 21 when he took office.
You might hear these kind of things and think, oh, that's overwhelming. I can't control the government. I can't control what they're doing. I can't control the spending. But we can take care of ourselves.
You want to make sure that you're buying bullion from somebody that you can trust and someone that does not charge you a commission when you go to sell.
If there's gonna be a commission, have it on the front end, not the back end when it skyrockets and now you're like, oh my gosh, look at this big, huge commission I gotta pay because it's on the back end before I sell it.
You can buy an ounce of silver for $23. So this is something everybody can get into. And if silver goes to $50, if it goes to $75, if it goes to $100, all of those profits are yours. And that's happening while the dollar is buying less and less at the actual grocery store.
So you can go to flyovergold.com, fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever. Or to do the same thing, you can just call 720-605-3900.
You know, on the Flyover Conservative Podcast, we kind of have a lot of latitude because we don't have bosses or anybody that we work for. We can kind of talk about
our own mics.
Yeah, got our own stuff. So we can kind of talk about whatever we want. We can talk about lip gloss, or we can talk about, tea or something, whatever. But we're going to talk about the things that we're most concerned about as parents, as grandparents, and the craziness around us. How do we adapt to things going on in the world that are working against our best interest? Beginning in January of 21, a lot of things in our country started going backwards in a big way. You've seen crime go up. You've seen a lot of things that were readily available become not available. There's trains crashing. There's boats crashing. Mm-hmm. Literally planes crashing into food processing plants. Mm-hmm. It's like there's just a lot of things that are unprecedented. But it's becoming the precedent because they seem to be happening all the time since January of 21. And so access to high quality food that you can trust, you know what's in it, and you can see through the veil that's placed there by our own government to keep you in the dark about what you're actually eating. And we want to cut through all of the middlemen, all of the marketing, mm-hmm. all the commercials, all the stores, trace this all the way back to somebody who knows that actually is touching cows on a daily basis. From Ozark Wagyu, Jeremiah and Amy Harris.
Yay! How are we doing?
Great. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You guys were sharing some concerning information with us about the USDA and some things coming out about meat coming from other countries. Tell our listeners about it because it was concerning us and we wanted them to know about it as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I just pulled some statistics from the USDA, their monthly report. And I'll just get close to the numbers here, but our export numbers, and this is for beef specifically, was 232 plus or minus million pounds, which is pretty regular over the last year. Our import numbers was 503 million pounds. This is for the month of January, comparison import-export, 503 million pounds, up 2 million pounds more than the previous 6 months.
2 million pounds.
And this has been tracking for a long time. We've got a 2022 chart here that shows the amount that we're bringing in shooting up, and it's even more so now.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. 2 million pounds above normal. So the number one importer was Brazil, then Argentina. So this is critical in the sense that, you know, you need to know your source. So right now, the meat that's coming into the U.S., 2 million pounds above normal. The USDA does not have a country of origin labeling for beef specific. So if that animal comes in live, gets transported over live, slaughtered in the U.S., you or I, we would never know where it comes from. Their standards may or may not be of United States standards, right? So if you have a label and you go to the store and you buy a label and it tells you that it's all natural, organic, grass fed, whatever it is, their standards may be totally different than our standards. So I think it's very important that people know the source of their meat, where it's coming from, and you know where they can obtain it, where it's a proven source. Mm-hmm. The reason why we have such a big import is our supply numbers are lower. Since 1980, we've lost over 600,000 ranchers across the United States since 1980. Input costs have went up 300-400%.
And the farmer's not making more money.
And the farmer's not more profitable because, you know, there's four companies out there that make up for 85% of the beef in the world. Those companies are controlling the market. So we've lost over 600,000 ranchers across the United States. So I think it's very, very important that people know that.
Mm-hmm. When you buy a shirt, you know, you look at the label or something, mm-hmm. it might say, you know, whatever, made in the Philippines, made in Malaysia, made in China. Like the labeling, if you buy, you know, electronics or dishes, you know, there's always a sticker on there. Our beef doesn't have that. Labeling's always a big issue. I bring it up all the time because I'm just baffled by the fact of even in the state of Missouri, it was a pioneer state to be able to where they sued to try to get a bill passed here that said, hey, you have to tell us if you're putting mRNA technology in the beef. Couldn't pass it. They didn't even say you had to stop doing it. They just said on the label, tell us if you're putting mm-hmm. mRNA vaccine-like technology in, graphene, if you're putting those things in the cows. Couldn't do it in Missouri, which means you're for sure not going to do it in California, mm-hmm. New York, Oregon, you know, somewhere like that. So there's this thing on the food that we eat. You are what you eat, as the saying goes. And they want the freedom to be able to operate in complete autonomy and put something on your plate and you're going to eat it and you don't know. Again, if I was at a restaurant, if I asked the waiter, can you please tell me if the chef spits in my food that he has, you have to tell me. No, we're not going to tell you that. Like, I'm not even saying he can't spit in my food. I'm just saying, do me a solid and tell me when he does this. Like, they don't even have that kind of courtesy to us as the American people. You're dumb. You're stupid. We're in charge. We're the government. You're nothing. You're going to eat what we tell you, and we're not going to tell you what's in it. Pound sand. That's our relationship with the government and the USDA right now.
Yeah, it is. It's very sad. So, like I said, awareness, to me, is very important. This just like I said, know your source, know where you're getting it from. And you'll be a lot more healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring that article back up Colton had there a moment ago, because there's Democrats and Republicans both flipping tables back at Biden about importing cows from Paraguay. It says the main issue, imports from Paraguay, cutting corners, you know, is the headline. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just random or a one-off or this one situation. It's a method of operation. What happened is hurting the American farmers, centralizing power versus decentralizing it, where you got lots of farmers producing livestock. It's controlling it the same way everything has done, you know, with the tech community, with banking, with every other industry. But this is what we eat.
I say this is what we're consuming.
This is what you're putting in your body to regenerate itself.
Yeah. It's hard to find out what their standards are over there. You know, we don't know what their protocols are, what they're feeding, how they're feeding it, the vaccination programs. All we know that it's lean beef. So when USDA imports it, their grading system is a, you know, select, choice, prime, different grades of each. So when it comes in the United States, it's select or choice. We don't know, you know, the history of it. And the only way you're going to know your history is to know your source, know where you're buying your food from.
So let's talk about Ozark Wagyu, because we know you, we know the source. So tell our listeners about Ozark Wagyu and why are you different? Why are you
better? Where do you import your cows from?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we live in a small town, Eggers Springs, Missouri. Population 282, I think it is. Mostly farms. So there's 282 farmers out in Eggers Springs, Missouri.
When your family goes on vacation, the population drops.
Yeah. But all of our animals are born and raised in our farm. We finish all our animals. We don't move them around all over the country. They stay right there.
There's the future farmers.
Yay, yeah. I love it.
Look at all the little meat eaters on there.
Girls. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So we started this in 2000, I guess it was 2012 timeframe when we started switching over to Wagyu genetics.
Okay. I don't remember.
It was somewhere around there. So maybe a little later, but we started switching over our genetics to a Wagyu, and we use a breed called Akiushi. There's different types of Wagyu. You know, Wagyu means Japanese cow. So we use the Akiushi genetics. We started switching over our commercial herd, which is Red Angus and Angus based. And we started keeping females out of those, and we built up a higher percentage program. So our goal is to deliver a quality prime steak every time. So in doing that, it takes time. So we don't, you know, there's no implants, no hormones, no steroids. All of our animals are go through an all natural program, and they are 27 plus months of age before they're slaughtered to do it naturally.
And they're dry aged, which is a natural aging process that some of the bigger plants, they aren't able to use, like the natural way of aging the meat makes it more healthy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. We use a smaller plant, local plant here in to do that. But yeah, I mean, it's I think so far as quality, and the reason why we switched over to this is so far as quality of beef you're eating, you know, it has a lot to do with the fats that's in it. I think that Wagyu, and statistically, you know, science can prove that, you know, the fats in Wagyu, and you'll see data, you know, across the country where the fats in Wagyu are a higher concentration of monosaturated fats, higher concentration of oleic 3.
And your product is superior. When you go to OzarkWagyu.com, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Our family, we are meatitarians.
Yep.
We are not vegetarians. We are meatitarians. We love meat, and we try meat everywhere we go, and we absolutely love OzarkWagyu.com. So Flyover family, when you go there and use the promo code FLYOVER, they give you a discount, plus you're getting to try superior.
It's the Yeti.
It is. It is the
Yeti. And you're comparing
meat.
Like the plastic, like Aladdin cup kind of pricing for a Yeti product. That's the best way for me to kind of wrap my head around it. You're getting a luxury, high-end, great product at a competitive price.
Yes, no doubt about it.
And you know what's in it, you know where it came from, and you know what you're putting into your children's bodies and your own body. Michaela Peterson, Jordan Peterson, yes. These guys buy whole cows at a time. People that are in the carnivore diet world, you know, this is the product that people go to when they want the best. And, you know, you can live like a king on like kind of a regular price.
That is exactly right. Yeah. So Flavor Family, go to OzarkWagyu.com. Jeremiah and Amy, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, guys. Thanks a lot.
And make sure Flavor Family use promo code FLYOVER when you go to OzarkWagyu.com. Yeah,
get your discount.
Hey guys, Frank Cox here. I'm here with my buddy Kyle from over there at Ozark Valley Wagyu or Ozark Valley Beef Company. We're going to cook up some Wagyu beef burgers today on the Santa Maria Grill using this flat top. Boom. Can you put too much cheese on a burger? Take your time. We're not trying to push through it.
All right, guys. I get to take a bite now. Check it out. Here we go. Anyway, OzarkWagyu.com. Get on over there, get your burger. I'm going to eat the rest of this right in front of you.
All right, Flavor Family, let me throw kind of hypothetical at you. What if you went to a doctor that had an area of specialty and you trusted him? He was like, shared your beliefs, you know, knew there's a spiritual nature to it, looked at everything going on in your body. That's great. But then what if also in that practice he had, I don't know, half a dozen or more other doctors that are the brightest minds in completely different areas of medicine that approach it together? And they would all share information working together and saying, hey, from every direction, how do we take this person from good to great? And you do your best part and you do your best part. And even like say the dentistry aspect that we don't have in house, let's work with people that share those same beliefs on not just medicating and numbing you out, but actually getting you healthy and working in the way your body is designed.
Huge.
And you have breakthroughs and stuff. Like, I've struggled with this since I was in grade school. Why did nobody ever diagnose this? They were just trying to medicate this out or just say that's just how you're made and you just should live with it. What if they actually have solutions and they all work together?
That would be unbelievable.
That maybe is how it was designed to work. But
and it could be possible.
It is possible because we know somebody's making it work. The one and only Dr. Troy Spurl.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys. As you're like talking, I'm like, man, I really need to meet this person you're describing. I didn't know what you're talking about.
Well, we sure are thankful for you, man. Truly, like helping us. We were talking before we actually came on, like, okay, different things that we're needing to do, making trips out there to your area, because you are truly changing people's lives. You changed my life completely with the restless leg syndrome. I mean, it was something that I was in pain. Every time that we went out to dinner, if I was riding in a car in the evening, just sitting on the couch, I mean, just always in bed, I'd get in bed, I'd rub my legs together. They were always in pain. And the other day I was talking to a friend who I didn't know had restless leg syndrome issues as well. And she told me, I was like, I have the solution. You have to talk to Dr. Spurl because it was life changing to me.
We had our anniversary dinner the other night. We ate for 3 hours at Capitol Grill in Kansas City. And you know,
not one issue.
It was just nothing but highlights. And it was kind of a long drive home. It wasn't like, oh, legs hurting. It was just all wins all the way around. I was like, man, that's just quality of life.
Yes. I'm glad, super glad to hear that. It's always the intention. And so, that is awesome. And I'm going to kind of throw that right back at you guys, because when we were talking as well, for me, I know that the most successful people in life take 100% responsibility in life. And you guys do that with your healthcare. You are truly seeking root cause issues and causes of what's going on. And so not everyone operates that way. So people who do take 100% responsibility own the results in life and then just kind of take the information and run with it. You guys have done that. So it's always a pleasure working with people who operate in that realm. And it's no surprise you have the success that you do in whatever you seem to touch. So that's great. I love just your attitude when it comes to healthcare and everything.
Thank you.
Put up your website there at officialsynapse.com, because there's a lot of people out there that are like, man, my child has this thing and they've not gotten the answers, or mm-hmm. my husband has struggled with sleeping for years and we can't get, these are real
autoimmune
life.
Autoimmune diseases. You're hearing that all the time.
Oh, and it's not just the problem. I mean, the problem is one thing, and people learn how to kind of manage it and get through, but there's a domino effect. It's like, well, you're probably not earning as much money as you could because you're not performing at a high level. You know, mm-hmm. you drag yourself into work, you drink a gallon of coffee, and you're trying to get through the day. Like, that is not thriving. And the domino effects in this in your life, you're probably, when you're not feeling good and you're not operating at 100%, you're not really the husband you're supposed to be, the parent you're supposed to be, right. The grandparent. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of other balls drop because you're just trying to keep your daily routine, those balls in the air, and you can't even focus on this. I'm supposed to be writing this book. I'd love to be involved in ministry at my church. I would, the more peripheral things, which I think those areas are where we're, really supposed to be, we're created to be spending our time. Those are the difference makers. I mean, your career and your job and get through the day is a part, but if you're done at five and you mm-hmm. don't, that's the end of your creativity. That's the end of your, day. Cause you're just trying to get through. That's not thriving and really working and doing the stuff we're supposed to be doing.
No, we say it this way. We say that people are living too short and dying too long, and they're just not getting the quality of life. And part of, just who we became and what we're about. We wrote it, our mission statement on the wall, to become a worldwide agent of change in the fields of healthcare and human potential. Because I believe when people become the best version of themselves, then they're going to do good things. I think you take God-fearing, and when I say God-fearing, I mean just having fear of being absent from God, having God not in your life. The fear of never having that connection again. When you truly understand that, when you truly have a relationship and then you have that fear and then you get your health back, you've got the spirit behind you. And if you're an entrepreneur, then you become a spiritpreneur. You start blessing other people. You start pouring into other people. And so that's what was put on my heart a long, long time ago. We wrote it on the wall. And as unfortunate as the last 3 years have been and just the seasons we're in with the politics and everything, it is such a blessing because more people are going to God and more people are focusing on their health to become the best versions of themselves.
That is exactly right. So Colton was kind of clicking through my favorite part of your website at officialsynapse.com. And that was like just showing all of the different conditions you can help with. And I know there's a lot more, but just giving people an idea. So you guys can go there and just look at all of the different things.
Read a few off if people are like, on the treadmill or something.
Yeah. So Dr. Sproul, just a few things that people might be helped with.
So I'll actually go through some of the things we're seeing this week, because we have patients from Washington, D.C. with autoimmune thyroid, Graves' disease, Hashimoto's. We have people coming in from Montana who are more for just type 1 diabetes and for detoxification. We see a lot of fibromyalgia. We're seeing a lot of mental disorders. I'm going to talk about one in particular when it comes to anxiety and depression. Mm. And it's due to you'll see the words copper zinc imbalance or cryptopyroli. It's when these chemicals kind of build up in our brain because there's a deficiency of zinc and B6. And the B6 primarily comes from the good bacteria in our gut. So we test these things. It manifests as these weird mental disorders, depression, anxiety, bipolar even, pseudo schizophrenia, not a true schizophrenia, but some other factors there. So we see a lot of those disorders. Fatigue and chronic fatigue, headaches and migraines are some of the biggest ones. We're seeing a lot of chronic pain right now because of inflammation. ADHD, mental health, like we said, there's a whole section there. And then a lot with endocrine and hormone imbalances, PCOS. This week we have someone who came in with PCOS, but we found the root cause was glyphosate toxicity. The glyphosate's the main ingredient in Roundup, and she spent 2 years working at a golf course where she waded in the water with boots on, but it would often go into her shoes and the water run off from the golf course, and she was collecting the golf balls. But she had over 20 times the normal healthy okay limit of glyphosate in her body, and it set off a whole PCS hormone imbalance scenario.
Wow. How would she ever discover that? That would be a really hard thing on your own.
Yeah, exactly. So we came in, we found out what she had, and then we ordered the testing for it because we suspected it, and it was the highest one we'd seen in someone so young.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. So, again, you mentioned people from Montana and Washington, D.C. and, you know, all over. They can do blood work at distance. There's a lot of stuff you can do at distance, and people can come then, you know, on occasion. So it's kind of a, you know, I don't know. I joke a lot. Like, I kind of wish all the technology and stuff would go away. We were kind of back in the 1800s a little bit. I got more, you know, I don't think social media, I don't think all this stuff is really good for us as a species.
Right.
But man, you got to embrace the good because no matter where somebody is, they can have access because there may not be somebody in their neighborhood that does what you do.
Right.
More than likely not. But no matter where they are, they can.
So if somebody is in another area, Dr. Spurl, how do they get a hold of you to find out about your practice and then to potentially be a patient?
Well, they go to our website, and at the front page of our website, you fill out the form there, and there's a free discovery call, and we look at what your interests are as far as what you want. There it is. It says get started today. And we'll talk to you in that discovery call and figure out if you're a good fit, if there's something we have for you. We have smaller programs for remote patients that can't get to our clinic. We have some larger ones too, because we can we have staff that will be able to regulate and monitor things from a distance. So we have all kinds of different options because we've now, for the last 25 years, we've treated people from all 50 states and from 12 different countries. So we've got a nice big map on our wall of where everyone comes from. And
we've
got a pretty good system. COVID did force us to go online, which again was another blessing in disguise. And so, we're working with people from all over the country right now. And it is, what I can tell you is people are really struggling, really suffering right now, and they need a lot of help. So we're happy to be there for them.
And you got Olympic athletes all the way down to, you know, rednecks in Missouri that mostly just, you know, are good at like smoking briskets and stuff like that. Like this guy. So let's jump into, you always have these like gems. I love to, cause it's like an immediate value add for the listeners, things that they can learn here and apply, you know, right away. This is my favorite part. So let's jump into a couple of Dr. Troy Spurl gems.
Yeah. So these gems are just things we've noticed over the years or little things that can be sneaky. So I mention them because there's always a handful of people that will get that information to be able to apply it right away and make a change for their health. Mm-hmm. So the first one, we're going to focus on a very, very important nutrient that a lot of people may be deficient in. So let me read it off here. So in the whites of our eyes, a lot of times people will get like red. And so you can see that redness, and sometimes they get red in around on the eyelid. And so any type of inflammation in around the eye can actually be due to a B2 deficiency. And so you can start with 1000 milligrams of B2 all the way up to 3000. A lot of times they'll start with 750 milligram tablets, and that's okay. But if you start to see the redness in the eyes and you have sensitivity to light, it's called photophobia. You go out and you can't drive with the light of the sun in the car. A lot of times that's a B2 deficiency. And there's a whole other reason why we end up becoming B2 deficient. It has to do with the environment we're in and inflammation from other factors. But we see it with inflammation in and around the eyelids and the eyes themselves. Also,
so you were talking about redness around it, but what if somebody just has like you know, they're like bags or, you know, just extra under like inflammation?
That's a little different. So that's lymph that's not being drained properly. And that's very, very common. So that happens with certain sleep disorders and other just detox issues. And for that, you can actually take this is a home remedy. So this was not a gem that I had prepared, but I'm
going to share. Yeah, sorry about that.
Bonus gem.
That's okay. Bonus gem. There, you can actually take organic coconut oil and coffee and you rub them together and then you put them on underneath there and it'll start to shrink up the eyes. So you put pressure, you actually rub, and then you put that on underneath there. And so I actually order a product from a company that we have on our shelf that actually makes that already pre-made. So you don't have to but you can do it yourself at home as well.
So is it coffee grounds or is it actually coffee grounds? Okay.
Is it regular coffee? If you want better results, you instant coffee. Is it faster?
It has to be caffeinated.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a cool trick.
A good question. Yeah, it is. And so, cause the caffeine tightens the skin and the coconut oil helps with the oil to actually move the lymph along.
Okay.
And that's they can buy that already pre-made though on your website. Is it available there?
Not on our website yet, but it's a home-based business out of Iowa, and I found them just recently. So we've onboarded them, and I can't even remember the name of their company is Coco Roo, COCORROO. So you could look that up too, and bless them; they're a good family.
Okay.
And the other thing is, some people have iron deficiency anemia, and they continually take iron, but they can't raise their hemoglobin or the red blood cells. So the doctors get stumped. And these people, if you're listening, that's also a sign of B2 deficiency. So if you have the redness in the eyes and the anemia that doesn't respond to iron, check out B2. A lot of times you just have to add that B2 and different things like antibiotic use and other scenarios, side effects of medications, they'll deplete B2. And so that's one of the reasons why we're seeing so many people who eat a lot of B2 foods, but actually are deficient in B2 because of the other stuff that we're putting in our body, usually medications.
Okay. Very cool.
So if somebody's taking like a B complex, that's kind of the popular, thing. It just may not be covering that enough. They just supplement with B2 by itself.
And 2,000.
Exactly. 3,000. Yeah. So in a B complex, you might have 500 milligrams of B2. So you just need a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so the way B vitamins work is, riboflavin, love it. Mm-hmm. So these are actual foods that B2 is high in. So the way B2 works, it's kind of like if you are putting in a railroad spike and someone has to put together the pieces of railroad, another person has to hold the spike and another person hits the hammer. Well, B2 is holding the spike. So if you have plenty of railroad, you have a guy with a hammer but no spikes, it's useless. So a lot of times you have to add in temporarily extra B2 so that you can basically keep the system going.
Okay.
And so it gets depleted by different things in the body. So it's really important to, with the B complex, sometimes you have to just add in one of the B vitamins. And so these are the symptoms that we see with the B2 deficiency.
Cool. Okay.
Last one. This is one of my favorite ones because this has to do with body pH, but basically every single enzyme in your body and every single hormone is pH dependent. What that means is if you're acidic, your hormones and your enzymes work at half of the efficiency. So you could look up thyroid symptoms and you're like, man, I have every single thyroid symptom. You go to your doctor and they do a full panel thyroid testing and the lab levels are good. The doctor says, no, everything's perfect. And you're like, man, but it sure does line up with hypothyroid. And the reality is you're just acidic because the hormone levels are right, but they can only work 50%. So the analogy I give with that one is like working in a factory where you have 100 workers and they normally have a good output. But then all of a sudden you say for lunches now, we're going to start serving alcohol. And then you notice in the afternoon, their output decreases.
Right.
Well, that's an acidic environment now. So the same number of workers are producing half as much.
Makes sense. Okay. So having a heck of a lot more fun. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's true. Probably a lot more laughs.
So the first thing, great question. So the first thing is to look at what's causing the acidity. So sometimes it's our food. Sometimes it's because we're not breathing properly. The number one way we actually improve our acid levels is through breathing. Mm-hmm. If we don't breathe off the carbon dioxide properly. So a lot of people, because of stress, are shallow breathers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're not actually breathing properly. So 1/4 inch, this is actually a fifth gem. You guys are getting like gemmed up today. Okay. 1/4 inch of decreased rib excursion, expansion of breath. Every single day, if you have 1/4 inch decrease rib expansion, that's equal to an Olympic sized pool of oxygen. Your body just didn't get that day.
What?
Wow. So is it like posture makes a difference or?
Posture makes a difference. Stretching makes a difference. And if you're not used to being out of breath, then like by pushing yourself, that's why I'm a huge fan of sprinting, even into your 60s and 70s. even if it's 10 yards or whatever it is, you have to keep those muscles going. The more we sit at a desk and the tighter we get, then the more our ribs don't spread out and our lungs can't expand. So you're missing out.
Producer Colton added sprinting into his workout regime. And what was the stat you read the other day? Like how many people sprint after the age 30 or something?
Yeah, after the age of 30, it's like 92% of people will never sprint their full out speed ever again after the age of 30. I was shocked. It was way past the vast majority. It's actually a minority, a very small minority that will ever sprint again for the rest of their life.
Wow.
And it's deadly. I mean, it literally kills people that they don't sprint.
Yeah.
Now we know why.
Yes, exactly. And so I don't recommend if you haven't sprinted for 15 years, just going out and sprinting, ease into it, but then get good at it. Even if it's 20 yards, I will race my grandkids, and I have grandkids that are in their teens. And this is the first year I'm losing. I've got some pre-athletic grandkids. And so up until this last year, I was still pretty good at the sprinting against them and racing. I was beating the 20-year-olds and stuff too in the family.
What? So.
I still had it, but it's important. I really believe that one's an important one. So
that is great advice. These are so cool and so helpful.
And we can all do it right now.
That's exactly right.
Everyone goes for a run.
Yes.
Yep. All right. So Flyover family, go to official synapse.com. Check out all of the things that Dr. Sproul was talking about, as well as you can sign up for a free appointment. To kind of just find out what your options are with their practice. What's this there, Colton?
It's Rocky III. He's training with Apollo Creed.
Got to get your sprinting in.
Get sprinting. Your sprinting in.
them running on the beach, man. But I'll tell you what, Apollo Creed is the best body ever.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say my clinic director looks like Apollo Creed, but I do not look like Stallone at all. The marquee, our clinic director, he's got that.
That is awesome. All right. Well, Flyover family, go to officialsynapse.com. Dr. Sproul, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
My name is Dr. Troy Sproul, and I'm CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. While we're a full functional medicine clinic where we're looking at the entirety of the body, we have nurse practitioners, chiropractors, acupuncture. We do functional restoration with BTL equipment, and we have medical doctors on staff as well to help with PRP and other injections for pain relief. We do a multitude of services, labs, nutrition counseling, health coaching. We've got it all. We are constantly being asked about how to improve their immune system. How do I go through a flu season without getting a cold? I myself have gone 30 years without missing a day of work, never gotten a cold, never been sick. And we just show our patients how to do that. We answer those questions. Why am I tired? Why do I have pain? So if you're watching this right now, just go to our website, officialsynapse.com, click on free discovery call, answer three simple questions, and we'll get you started. One more thing, we are the highest rated, most reviewed functional medicine clinic in all of Minnesota.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Flyover Conservatives podcast with David and Stacey Whited. Please subscribe, hit the notification bell, and leave us a comment below. Lastly, if you enjoyed today's podcast, share with those who came to mind. Be blessed and make it a great day.